Hey, Danielle.
Hey, Daniel.
Has this ever happened to you? You really want to listen to a podcast that The Voice has done, but in order to do that, you have to go to www.georgetownvoice.com, go to the halftime page, and then maybe search for the podcast that you actually want to listen to and find it. And it makes it really hard to find episodes that were posted a long time ago because there's so much great content on www.georgetownvoice.com.
You know what? I do. And there has to be a better way.
Well, now there is. The Georgetown Voice podcast network is on iTunes.
Really?
Really?
How do I find it?
Just search The Voice Podcast Network on iTunes, and you'll get it.
What is it again?
The Voice Podcast Network.
On iTunes.
On iTunes. Or any of your favorite podcast players.
Amazing.
If you subscribe to The Voice Podcast Network feed, you can get any episode of The Voice Podcast Network the day it comes out. That's this podcast, The Untitled Leisure Project, or The 250, and potentially some other ones that we're working on right now and haven't titled.
Wow.
That's amazing.
That's amazing.
And all for the low price of
free. And maybe a 5-star rating.
Untitled Leisure Project. My name is Daniel Varghese. I am super excited for this week's episode. We are talking about something that is near and dear to my heart as of 24 hours ago when I first watched the first episode. We are talking about Atlanta, the new show from Donald Glover on FX. I am joined by a crack team of the most brilliant leisure thinkers that The Voice has to offer. Minus John Block. To my left is the one, the only, progenitor of the 250, destroyer of worlds.
Oh, yes.
Danielle Hewitt.
Hello. Hey, guys. What do I say?
I don't know. I kind of just called you the progenitor of worlds,
so
I was kind of excited for you to be huzzah!
I'm pretty chill about it.
All right, whatever.
Never mind now.
To her right. The one, the only, the Calvin and Hobbes tattooed, the strong, the mighty, the Mike Bergen, leisure editor Mike Bergen.
You really like shot all the nice compliments on her.
but that's fine.
I'll keep going. I'll take it. hi guys, how's it going?
And finally, in our fourth chair, he is a deity, sort of, to some,
I guess,
but no one worships him. John Block.
Hi,
John, the podcast god Block.
Shout out Clamalone. 538's Clamalone gave me that name, so I think it's okay.
Isn't that a great thing to be able to say?
It's pretty legit, actually.
Isn't it great to be able to say, shout out Clamalone? Like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
In the podcast community, she is also kind of a god.
Yes.
In her own way.
Yeah. All right, well, today we'll be talking about Atlanta, as I said. The first two episodes were released on Tuesday night. And they are both, well, the first one is available for viewing on YouTube and Facebook for free. And also both are available on FX or FX Now if you have either of those. Let's just get some of your general thoughts about each of the two episodes. Do any of you want to give like a quick summary of what happened?
I can do that.
Yeah, sounds great.
So basically it's a cool Donald Glover project.
Okay, this is going to be awesome.
I volunteered before I really thought about it, but it takes place in kind of urban sprawl Atlanta. Does that sound fair to say?
Yeah.
The main character is Donald Glover's goes Ernie. I forget his last
Ernest. Ernest Marks.
Ernest Marks in the show, and he's kind of down on his luck. He has like a complicated relationship with the mother of his daughter, and his cousin is a small time. Debatably kind of unclear how famous he actually is, but pretty low down rapper, and he's been looking for an opportunity. So the first two episodes kind of him reaching out to his cousin and wanting to manage him and really find like a better opportunity for himself. And he's kind of an intellectual who is also very poor at this point, and he has hijinks ensue.
That's a pretty decent summary.
Yeah, hijinks ensue is always a good catch-all.
Hijinks.
Like if you don't know what else to say. But it sounds more descriptive.
Yeah, so I think that we'll talk about this in a couple of different ways. We'll talk about each of the writing and the character development that's here. We'll talk a little bit about how the show is shot. And then I'd like to talk towards the end about broad themes that we've noticed in these like last two episodes, which I think have both been some of the best episodes I've seen on TV in this last year. Let's talk about, so to talk about the writing, I think the most important part about the show to me is something that I didn't necessarily know, I wouldn't have been able to necessarily pick up from the trailer, is that I think the show is actually really funny.
Yeah.
In a way that's not, it's not a comedy, but it is very funny. Do you, any of you guys have thoughts on that? On like kind of the humor style of this TV show?
I kind of think it's a comedy.
Really?
Like it's
not, I think it's billed as a comedy.
Yeah. Like, I think so. I wouldn't say it's a comedy in the same way that like Family Guy is a comedy where it's like all jokes.
Uh-huh.
But maybe in a similar way to like something like BoJack Horseman is a comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Where like jokes are an essential part of the show, even if they're not the most important.
Hmm.
I think the 22 minute structure is kind of, people always assume it's a comedy. And I think if you looked at some of the promotion art leading up to this, you kind of had like, oh, that's funny kind of thing. They all had like the Georgia peaches in their mouth and like stuff like that. And I think that implication, but I agree, like stuff like Wilfred that FX has done, FX kind of has these slightly existential drama comedies. I don't want to say dramedy. I really hate that word. but I think it's been pitched. Granted, I have not seen the trailers. I've only seen the art for it. But I think it was pitched as a comedy by assumption and knowing Donald Glover's past.
Right.
But his rap is like not, be a whole other thing. But
yeah. I don't know. I think you can really tell it's Donald Glover's like brainchild a little bit. Also, I feel like the comedic beats are very him. Like, I don't know. I can just hear, like, especially in Earn, like when Earn, like, I don't know, says like,
what? No.
Yeah. I mean, yes, clearly it's actual voice, but it's also his comedic voice.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. No. So I think, I don't know, just like a lot of it is very, like, you can just, it's like very Donald Glover.
Right. So a lot of his comedy is very reactionary.
Yeah.
If you've watched Weirdo, his big stand up special, the humor that he has there is very observational, it's very traditional. But he does that thing where he augments his voice a lot and for comedic effect. And it's something that I found really funny in high school, and that, like, after I've watched a lot of comedy, it's like, oh, maybe this isn't really, like, that interesting. But for some reason, in this format, in, like, this kind of TV show where it's, like, really short, that works super well for me.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of, in his character, there's a lot of, like, aside-type jokes where he'll say things that are, like, Mike, when you were describing the episode, you said he's, like, very intellectual. And so he'll say things in, like, an offhanded way that are, like, kind of smarmy and like intellectual and that are really funny, like for example in the first episode when Paperboy is asking asking Ernest what manage means, and he goes, well, it comes from the Latin to mean hand, and Paperboy's like, I'm gonna ignore what you just said and instead talk about my own thing. Like, I think that's really funny, but I don't necessarily know if that's, those kind of jokes make it like a comedy per se.
I can weigh in on this a little bit. I think an important thing is he's trying to note how separate he feels from his community in some ways, that he's not as traditional. Like, he's wearing, like, red short shorts and walking around in, like, these, like, unique clothes. He's got, like, the high-strung backpack and like, stuff like that. Like, he's kind of an intellectual. He's determined, but he's not, like, he doesn't, like, even the things where he's saying, like, I don't smoke and things like that, he's a little separate from everything. And a lot of it is observational and, like, environmental comedy, which I think it's not people trying to say jokes to make, and there's not like banter, it's just kind of these people interacting with things. And I think a lot of the value of the humor, and this is, you see this a lot more in the second episode, is it's people laughing together at the situation they're in, which is a lot more realistic, especially the things like in the kind of the holding area for the prison, I think, or lock, I'm not sure the proper terms, but
it's a jail, it's a holding cell,
like kind of large waiting area showing terrible like, things, but just the people joking around in there, it wasn't like someone's not trying to say something to be funny.
Mm-hmm.
It's the casual humor that would actually you'd hear in a real conversation. Like, the big, like, hey, look at me kind of joke is not real. Like, you'll see it in, like, stuff like It's Always Sunny of people, like, doing this big leap.
Right.
But this is showing more reality than something that's a scripted comedy. Totally.
I was going to say, I think definitely it shows how separate he feels, especially, like, when he was in the jail holding cell, like, like, when the guy was talking to the trans woman, everyone was like, no, that's a dude. And then Donald Glover, like, I mean, Ernst just sitting there like, I mean, it's fine, right? It's okay. Like, sexuality is fluid. Spectrum. So, like, everyone's like, hi, you're gay, ha. And you're like, it's fine, right?
The lack of sugarcoating as well is, like, an important thing. Like, they're not trying. They're trying to show that, like, reality is not perfect. Like, you know what I mean? Not everyone's going to have a perfectly considerate joke that's going to be like, oh, that's hilarious while offending no one. Like,
yeah.
I think, like, a realistic area, especially if you're trying to show a rundown area and problems there, I think that problems also come with, like, imperfections of, like, people's social awareness and things like that.
Yeah. That's a really interesting point about this. The purpose of the humor here is different than it would be in a show like Community or any other project that Donald Glover has been a part of. Like, in a show like this, that's so interesting that you're saying that it's separating Donald Glover and his character from everyone else. Well, and it's more natural in the sense. It's not like because in a sitcom or in a show, in a sitcom like Community, the jokes are leading up to some big climactic moment, like in the paintball episodes where, you know,
just laying on the ground and like Saving Private Ryan,
exactly,
like pull out shot and everything like that.
Yeah, that's so.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's necessarily really cool. Like completely separating him. Like, mm-hmm. I think he definitely I think he dropped out of college is what his backstory is.
He's on a break.
He was
supposed to be taking a year off, like, and he's taken. It's now 3 years.
So it's not like completely separating him out from his community because it's still his community, and he's still kind of. He's still like a part of the community, but like having those experiences going to Princeton and coming back is definitely like, I think it creates an interesting dynamic and doesn't exactly like fully separate him, but like it separates
totally.
Him a little bit. Yeah.
Totally.
In like one or two gender studies classes can make you think a lot differently than
right.
like having not had those experiences.
Right.
Yeah, or had
totally.
The opportunity to even, yeah.
Yeah. John, what do you think about like some of the humor in this series so far?
I mean, so I think there's some of the kind of atypical humor like you guys have talked about,
mm-hmm.
but I mean, at the same time, like there's still just jokes that are like funny for being funny.
Yeah.
Like you have Darius Paperboy's friend, who's just basically a character like for comedic effect.
Hey man, can I measure your tree?
Yeah, exactly.
That's always a
nah.
No.
Not right now.
That means no.
But exactly. Like that's not, you know, part of like some broader narrative
right.
of the show so much. It's just a really funny joke.
Right.
And so I think like you can have both and
right.
both can work.
Okay, I've definitely come around on this show being a comedy in a more traditional sense. Just well, I guess not. It's not the kind of comedy that we're very used to seeing on TV, but it's definitely like a comedy.
I also think
yeah.
especially like whenever they announced that this show, like I don't like I think I kind of when he like was developing it, you could kind of see where it was going, but like at the beginning I probably would not have pegged it to be like this.
Right. And I thought that too.
Yeah.
And then I rewatched that first scene like 3 times.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this is actually hysterical.
Yeah.
Like my favorite joke of the series so far, probably, is from that first scene where they initially, like, he's holding them off and they're confronting each other, Paperboy and this other random dude who just broke his car mirror, which we didn't know because that hadn't happened yet in the episode. It doesn't matter. And someone just way in the distance just yells, like, world star! And it's so, and Donald Glover's character is like, no, not right now! And then Paperboy pulls out a gun,
yeah.
and then the guy goes, oh, it's definitely going on world star! And you're just like, that's so funny and random and didn't need to be there for any advancement of the story. But it's, like, really interesting,
yeah.
and it allows their characters to react to the whole situation in a different way, because, like, Donald Glover, outside of all of it, is just like, the implications of this would be so bad,
yeah.
and the whole while Darius is sitting there just being like, I think I've been here before, there's gotta be a dog around here, and he looks, and there's a dog, and you're like, what is happening, like, what,
yeah.
I think it's so interesting how, I don't know, just that humor enhances the story so much.
Yeah, definitely.
Because you, it actually gives you insight into all the characters. And you learn about them.
I think this is something you and I talked about maybe like 2 hours ago,
right.
though, that I think how quickly the jokes come and go, though,
uh-huh.
you know what I mean? I think it's a very interesting thing, like how I don't want to jump the gun on this if we're on the structure, but in terms of when the humor is around, it's around so many heavy topics,
uh-huh.
and like race and things like that. Even like the guy who keeps saying the N-word is just
yeah.
like really like...
the white guy.
Yeah,
the white guy
keeps saying the N-word.
He was
and
the worst.
Just like, and I think the joke is like, it's not like so much as like, there's always like the uncomfortably like racist character on like comedies. And I think seeing how different they portray it, that it's just like a common person just being really uncomfortable,
yeah.
I think is really grounds it, I guess, but you could still laugh at it. Of just like,
yeah.
oh, that's
no.
Terrible.
I thought that was a really interesting part where he was like he said it in front of Earn, and then he was like, "Oh, tell the story again.
Yeah,
tell it again." Because like, there's always that one dude who thinks he's like really down until it's like time to be Yeah, and you're like, no, you're not. Actually, you're clearly not.
That was something I noticed the second I watched it. I was like, oh, he said it the first time.
Yeah.
And then when he was around three black people.
Like larger black people.
Yeah, he wouldn't say it. And, yeah. And that's like in that interaction that Earn had with the janitor. He's like, would he ever say the N-word to you? And he's like, no, I'd fucking kill him.
Yeah.
Like, and he, those are, that's like verbatim. I mean, he's like, no, I'd fucking shove my foot down his throat. Something like that.
Break his foot. We want the actual line.
All right, well, yeah, we'll get back to the race element of the show. Yeah. But for now, because I want to start talking a little bit about how the show treats its characters, using the humor, using all of its tools. Because I think what's really interesting about the show is that each of these characters are kind of archetypes of a different kind of character that we've seen before. Like, Earn's character is this, like, dropout college student who you think is lazy and not... Like, he's the Marty McFly character, basically.
Yeah.
Except, like, Donald Glover throws, or the writing team of the show throws in a lot of details that kind of challenge that idea of who he is. So they tell you that he went to Princeton, and you're like, oh, so he's actually, like, really brilliant. And so and then they tell you that he's on a year off, and so that means, like, oh, something must have happened.
Yeah, and then they, like, say, like, something happened yeah. and he doesn't want to talk
and,
about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and so something bad. With Darius, I mean, you kind of think initially he's just, like, this weird dude who just is around, and that's not false. But also, like, he seems to have, like, a lot of substance to him and makes insights. But I think the most interesting character of the show is Paperboy himself.
Yeah.
Just because, like, especially in the second episode where he's mostly on his own. Well, all the characters, except for... So in the second episode, Paperboy and Earn are basically on their own the whole time. And just, like, watching him deal with his, like, fame in quotation marks.
Yeah.
And how people kind of know who he's supposed to be, but also don't actually know who he is.
Yeah.
And how he has to, like... be a version of himself that he thinks other people want him to be. It's so fascinating.
No, I loved the scene with the kids, like, playing water gun. One, because my dad has actually done that. Like, I think we wanted water guns. My dad was like, no, you can't have those. Why can't you? And we were like, what? Like, why can't we have water guns?
Yeah.
It's because of, like, I don't... Yeah. So, it was that, and then the fact that he was like, you shouldn't do that.
Right.
Like, he felt, like, bad that he was, like, projecting this image, but also he felt like he had to project this image.
And then
the mom comes, and he's like... Don't you know who I... It's, like, it's kind of, like, tentative fame for him. Because it's, like, don't you know who I am? Like, maybe you don't know who I am, but, like, I guess, like, it's, like, weird for him. And I thought that was so interesting.
Yeah.
I think he is maybe, like, one of the most layered characters. I'm excited to see what they do with him because I think there's a lot of anxiety and expectation. Like, especially the guy who was like, don't let me down. Like,
yeah.
Even though that was slightly humorous and strange, but it... It grounded, and, like, I didn't really understand. I thought it was just a joke until, like, I actually saw how much, like, anxiety he was having afterwards. And it's not guilt, which I thought was interesting as well. Like, not about shooting the guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what I'm curious about. Like, I don't know if... I wish they would explore that more. I was a little more curious because that guy kind of disappeared after being shot.
Yeah, I think...
he just, like, went and then...
In the news report, they said... Injured suspect still at large or something like that.
And then, like, there's clearly someone who's slightly after him in the second episode, and just seeing, like, his somber quality, like, fear for his life with, like, no guilt, it's very... I liked how confused I was, I guess.
Yeah.
I liked how curious, I guess, it made me feel. And, like, it made me really, like, invest a lot in this character very quickly.
I think I've also noticed that they're taking the same level of care to these three main characters, and they're applying it to all of the, like, everyone in the show who appears, like, at least once. So with Earn's parents especially, I think they've given them a very complex backstory and interesting motivations and everything. And I think Earn's dad is one of the funnier characters on the show because he has all those, like, really great lines about... And I also thought the discussion of Earn's poop was really funny, where they're just like, what, did you poke around? And he's just like, yeah, like, I did. You need to eat better. Like, I think that's hilarious and something that I think, like, if I left a bunch of poop in the toilet, like, my mom might actually do to me. Like, I don't know, maybe. Like,
hey, Daniel's mom.
I don't know, like, I doubt my mom listened to this. If my mom listened to this, I'd be getting a lot of texts right now. Yeah, and I think it's really interesting. They've also added that to Vanessa, who is Earn's girlfriend,
maybe.
Or girlfriend friend, in quotation marks, friend, like best friend, friends mama. With benefits, baby. Yeah, because like she's, it's unclear what her motivations are, like in this whole relationship, like why she's even doing this with Earn in the first place. There's got to be a reason, like why you might take pity on this person or still have feelings for them,
yeah.
or just resent them so deeply that you need to keep them around so you can hate them like in front of you.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just find them so fascinating.
Yeah, no, I think it's just really good pilot structure. Like,
right.
I think a pilot's hard because you have to like, entertain people, but you also have to like set all of this up.
Right.
And I feel like they did a really good job of like making like giving you like a taste of these characters, but also saying like there's definitely like deeper things that we're definitely going to go into in later episodes, and like it making me want to like know more about these characters while also keeping me engaged with like the episode proper. I thought they did a great job.
I'm already upset that this is only 10 episodes.
Is
like
it?
Yeah, it's only 10 episodes.
Is that
as
like the first season or for the whole thing?
For the first season.
Okay. It's probably going to be 13 if it's...
But, yeah, and I don't actually... It might be 11 if they count the first two as just like the one premiere. I'm not sure.
Okay.
But they're only half-hour episodes like on TV, so like 22 minutes. And I feel like they have, there's like so much they can do, and I'm like, there's going to be... It's almost just like a movie at this point.
Right.
It's going to be like basically a really long movie. I feel like there's just not enough. I'm really looking forward to season two already. It's been two episodes because there's so much to explore.
And I think it's because they've set up all these weird threads. Like, there's so much weirdness in this show. Like, for example, with when they're on the bus and the guy in the brown suit comes up to him, he's just like, he's just, eat the sandwich. And then
disappears.
He says, and my friend Moby's like, nah, I don't want to do that. He looks in his eyes, he's like, N-word? You better eat the sandwich. And then there's the cop car and he disappears and the sandwich is still there with the Nutella in, or like the Nutella is still there.
Yeah.
And he's like, what is going on?
Yeah.
I
think there's like an impressive ability to use suspense in this show.
Yeah.
And almost like the knowing when to not use it. I really liked the intro to the show. Originally I had mixed feelings on it, but I think starting off with the gun, like the shooting, like just took away that suspense, but and in a way made it a lot more suspenseful for the series at large.
Yeah.
I think like that. I think a lot of moments when, especially like when they're going out in the morning with Vanessa and Earn, and she's like, I have a date tonight. It gives you like a little bit of a rise of just like what's going on.
Yeah.
Everything just, it's almost like just that half suspense, like just a taste. Like they never really fully indulge you in like, yes, a big crazy thing is happening. And I think that just keeps you like, I don't know how long it could sustain itself like this, but I think just giving people a constant taste or an implication of what's going on just keeps you, I think that's more realistic. Like you're not going to, it's less omniscient of a narration, which I like.
And it's not going to be like, I'm going on a date because you did this to me, and then we did that, and then, yeah.
This is a great environment for you. it just kind of, it never actually fully engages with any of the questions it asks. Because, like, when she's like, I'm going on a date tonight, she's like, he's like, why are you going on a date? What's happening in this relationship?
Yeah.
Is that actually your child with this guy?
Yeah.
Like, why is he living with you if you're dating other people?
Yeah.
Like, I think the show is like really good at asking those questions, and I'm okay if it leaves some of them unanswered, but maybe it'd be great if
that's true.
We could get more info.
That's life though, you know what I mean? Like, which I like how loyal it's been so far to that of just not setting up like crazy like sitcom scenarios. Like it's progress most of it, and it's pitfalls, but it's never feels like. Well, to be fair, it's only been two episodes, so like I'm making a lot of judgment for two episodes, but it's so far it's been going that way.
Right. John, what are your thoughts?
On
this.
The show?
What we're talking about right now. The characters, the comedy, the
suspense.
The suspense aspect.
Suspense? I mean, I don't know that I would call it suspense. I'm not necessarily like on the edge of my seat.
Mm-hmm.
I think it...
I wrote intrigue in the doc.
Intrigue is probably a better word. Yeah, I mean, I like that... There are a lot of questions, but I think I'm going to wait to pass judgment on how the show deals with intrigue until they start delving deeper into some of the questions.
Okay.
But I think they've done a very good job in setting a lot of questions up.
I think that's fair enough. Do you guys have favorite scenes from the show so far from these first two episodes?
Yeah, I would say the water gun scene. I thought that was, like... very interesting to me. Then the holding cell was just very interesting because it also touched just on a lot of, like, just issues. It was, like, funny, but also, like, a little uncomfortable, especially with the, like, especially with the trans character and also the mentally ill guy, because, like, they're like, haha, he's back again, that's hilarious, and he's like, what? No, he needs serious help. Like,
yeah.
And it, like, touches on an issue, like, mental health and, like, poorer communities and the black community, like, it just, like, in that one, like, 2-minute scene, and it, like, was still funny, and it was still, like, engaging. I thought it was great.
Yeah, let's actually take that as a way of segueing into talking about the themes in this episode, because I think that one of the things this show has done well so far is kind of, I was talking to Mike about this earlier, is kind of emulate how we approach these big type of issues in our lives, but in media. So a lot of shows that are like, we're going to do a show about this one issue, like, it's kind of unnatural how it goes about. Like, for example, the Master of None is one of my favorite shows that's come out in the last year, but they're like, we're going to do an episode about Indians on TV. And so the whole episode is like, hey, we're acting and it's bad. And the whole story is like this Indians on TV thing. In this show, the important issues just come and go like they would in a normal conversation in our normal lives.
Yeah.
Like, we interact with something happens in front of us that, and again, this is a theory, so you're welcome to challenge me on this or whatever. We interact or see something that reminds us of an important issue that we, and something that we really deeply believe. Like, for example, like, if I believe that mental health in prisons is really important and that people who are sick should not be put in prison. And so if I saw someone who was mentally ill and in prison, I'd be like, he needs help. And then I'd keep walking and going on with my day. And I'd have to, because that's how humans live. That's how I exist, and that's how I don't get really upset all the time. But then, like, then in the next, and then maybe, like, sometime later that day, I see, like, a transgender person. I'm like, oh, this is really, like, just something like that is how we actually engage with these issues in our real life. And I thought it was really interesting how, especially in that second episode, they brought in so many big themes like that in a very natural way.
Yeah.
What do you guys think about that?
Well, go.
Oh, no, you go first.
Oh, I was just going to say, and I think they also, like you were saying, they kind of just bring him in a natural way, and instead of being like, this is bad, did you see that? Like, there was a part where he was talking about, I think Earn was saying something about being homeless and, like, acting crazy, and he's like, that doesn't make you homeless, that makes you schizophrenic. It's totally different.
Right.
It's like an offhand comment, but it's, like, very deep and very, like encapsulating of a very big societal issue and, like, a flippant comment. And yeah, I think it's great, yeah.
I think in seeing this, yeah, I see, especially in the prison sequence through most of that episode, I see Earn as, like, more of a narrator of what is actually going on, as opposed to, like, that kind of makes the bubble environment. But I know what you mean. It's definitely not shoved down your throat. Like,
right.
I think a lot of people remember, like, there was an episode of Glee, like, 4 years ago where I'm going to cite, this was, like, you guys will remember this, where they had, like, the Trevor Project little plug in the middle with Daniel Radcliffe. Very specific. And it was, like, a whole episode devoted to, like, cyberbullying and, like, and homosexuality and, like, an unexpected character. So it really, like, and I'm saying it's still important things to talk about, but it was a whole episode of just this thing beating, and they took, like, a little break for, like, a plug for Daniel Radcliffe in the middle of advertising for this. And I think, like, in terms of mainstream television, like, that really showed, like, a trend that I thought that episodes would be dedicated to things, Master of None as well. But, yeah, I think these things do come and go, and there's a lot of that. None of it's going to change either, you know what I mean? I think that's what it's trying to say, like, this thing's going to happen. And it's not like he's devoting the episode to fixing this thing, and then he goes on and another new plot happens. It's like, oh, this is it. Like, that's, and then you're left with it. And that's, I think, the somberness that kind of comes with a lot of these jokes and a lot of these moments.
Right. And that's how the show talks about race, too. It's something that is the undercurrent of everything that's happening, because this is a show about mostly black people talking to other mostly black people. But every time there's occasionally, like, a white person in the scene, and it always ends up, like, being a factor that they're a different race than everyone else, which is really interesting in a total flip of a lot of what's happened on TV, or a lot of what used to happen on TV, where it was, like, a lot of white people, and then there's, like, one black guy, and it was all about the black guy. What? You're making a face, John.
Even it's a flip in that way, and that it used to be very, like, noticeable when, like, a black person was on TV in a lot of cases. And then I think more recently, it's like they have black people on TV in a way where, like, they're actively trying to make it a complete non-factor.
Right.
Yeah.
That they're black. Like, if you look at, like, something like New Girl a lot of the time. Like, that's a show that, like, has, like, a very token black character who they're trying to make normal and, like, kind of, in a lot of cases...
To be fair, they did do an episode where it was, like, kind of flipping that, where I think Schmidt was concerned that Winston didn't have enough black friends, so Winston was just basically,
the
like...
Oh, crack episode!
Yeah, it's so funny! But it's like, hilarious, because he's like, is that what you think I'm like? Like, what? It's
where
great.
He convinces Schmidt that he's like addicted to
crack.
Yeah,
he's like, yeah.
I really need some crack, man.
It's like, I think that's great because it kind of like, it's like not putting him in a box per se, but saying like, what? Like, I don't, like, I think of the fact, the way the show treats race is definitely a factor of the fact that the whole writer's room is black. So I think a lot of the times what happens on television is like, the writer's room is typically all white people. And so when you're trying to write a black character, they're like, I think this is what black people are like. Yeah. Like, it's not to say, like, people don't get it right occasionally, but, like, just it's different from, like, being a white person that is interactive with a lot of black
sure.
people and then, like, actually being black and be like, no, this is, I'm like this. Like,
right.
It just comes off truer because it is.
Right.
And I think what I was saying, like, a lot of the times you'll have white writers who are like, we don't want to have to write this black character. We don't, like, even, they'll maybe even acknowledge that they don't know what it's like to be black. They don't want to, like, put themselves in that shoes, so they'll just completely ignore the issue.
So they'll write, like, a white character
they'll
write,
a
played by a black
exactly.
person.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think this show, it's almost, like, the opposite in the sense that, like, you just notice a lot. It's, like, meta in a way where, like, you notice when characters aren't, like, you notice the white characters in the show
right.
for them being white, and you kind of are like, this is not how a TV show normally is.
Right.
But I think, oh, sorry. I know. Also, it was just because, the radio dude was, like, the only white guy, except for, like, the police officer.
Right.
But, like, the thing about him was, like, I feel like that was, like, basically the whole point of his character was that he was, like, a white dude that, like, thought he was, like, with it or whatever.
Well, that's what I think is interesting. So they've created, the only white people in the show are kind of white people acting in a very specific way as they would, like, towards black people.
Yeah.
Like, the radio DJ guy, the radio DJ thought he was, like, super cool, so he was, like, using the N-word and stuff with, like, random black people and, like, multi-ethnic people, like, in the same shot when
yeah.
he's like, what's up, my dude? Like,
yeah.
and they're all, like, they awkwardly, like, high-five
yeah.
or whatever. And in the other white character, the notable white character in the show is the police officer who ends up beating the mentally ill person. When he's like, what's happening, buddy? And the guy who drinks toilet water, like, kind of spits a little bit up, and it, like, lands on his shirt, and then he just
loses it,
takes out a nightstick, and beats the crap out of the person who is mentally ill. And I think it's interesting that these are the two white characters in the show. They're a person who is, like, kind of acting as if he's black in a way that's super transparent and seen as, like, this is wrong. And then there's another person who's, like, an oppressor and who's just beating a black person. Literally.
Yeah.
I think that's really interesting. And in a fact, something that shows the fact that you can tell, like, a super nuanced story just, like, without white people entirely. And then using them in a way that a black person might experience them.
Yeah, I think that's, like, the most important part. Because it's not saying, like, this is what all white people are
right.
like. Because I feel like that's a function of, like, I feel like a part of the reason why it's, like, kind of hard to portray black people or, like, have black characters on television is because if you have so many of these white people writing black characters,
mm-hmm.
it's going to be all of the black people portrayed on television are going to be these just,
like, tokenized archetypal black people.
So, I think what makes this great is, like, it's not saying, like, this is what all people are, white people are like, but, like, this is an experience that I have had with, like, or, like, I've seen with, like, white people, and I don't think it's, like, it's not saying, like, evil. It's saying, like, this is an experience that I
right.
have, but we also have all of these other portrayals
right.
that, like, don't negate them, but say, like, this is just a range of human experience,
sure.
and I think that's just kind of, like, yeah, I think that's probably one of the best parts of the show, just
yeah.
because it allows, like, black writers to, like, get out a story
yeah.
in a very interesting way.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think this is really, it's really excellent in that sense. So let's move on to kind of talking a little bit about how the style of the film, or of the TV show, that I think is more like a film than anything else, suits the purposes of it. Did you guys have any thoughts about that? Like, did you notice anything particularly interesting about this way the show is shot?
I think a lot of, like, interesting, like, reveals of kind of, like, what's in the foreground and background. Mm-hmm. And, like, I don't know enough film terminology to really say what I'm trying to say. But I think it gives you the feeling of a fly on the wall.
Mm.
Like, the slightly lo-fi kind of camera quality. And I think the cuts to, like, these kind of wide shots, you usually see someone's back or from a side angle and things like that. It's not traditional, like, comedy filming. There's no real back and forth, like, I said this, then I said that. And, like, there's obviously the traditional, like, two-camera style but of sitcoms. But this thing is always, I think, a very cool shot. In the first episode was when he's like, it's 4:30, we're late. And then it cuts to them, like, smoking blunts on the couch out in the middle of, like, the field. And we saw that couch when he was walking on his way in.
Right.
And I think it was just such a... I think visual comedy really plays a factor in this show of just the different things like that, and just, like, all three heads on the couch. And just, like, you just have to, like, chuckle. You're like, oh, like... And if it was shot another way, it would have been more dramatic or something like that. Or even his mom kind of, like, through, like, the shitty plexiglass.
Mm-hmm.
And things like that. And there's more shots that I'm not thinking of right now, but just that general theme of visual comedy, just kind of not quite what you expect, and I think that plays into the suspense factor that we talked about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the show's, like, titled Atlanta from there, so, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I don't think they put a ton of, like, really, like, iconic Atlanta places. They have, like, when he was eating Jared Crickets, it's, like, a big Atlanta place.
Yeah.
Like, they did do the skyline at some point. But I think it had, like, a very Atlanta feel, sort of, just kind of
slower.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, and also they, like, inserted, like, that dude who was also in the radio room talking about why he was arrested.
Right.
And, like, you, like, didn't really understand what he was saying, because he just was talking.
Oh, yeah, because he was speaking in a very specific drawl,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
accent.
Yeah, exactly. So I think they definitely, like, put... And they was shot in Atlanta, so I think they definitely put, like, that kind of flair on it,
yeah,
which I really like.
I think that also goes to the idea of... It's shot in the way that people actually experience things. So if I live in Washington, D.C., not all of my, like, daily occurrences are seen in view of the monuments, unless I'm, like, super wealthy. And so, like, if I'm from Atlanta, I don't always, like, eat peaches every day.
Yeah.
Like, I don't always end up near where the, like, Olympic Park is.
Never.
Literally, you just never. Wouldn't. You don't. And so I think it's super cool.
Yeah.
One of the really interesting pieces of criticism and journalism done about the show before it came out was by Rembert Brown in New York Magazine, and he did, like, a really extensive interview with Donald Glover and sat in on the show, the tapings of these episodes, and they were talking to the director, or Donald Glover was talking to the director, Hiro Murai. Okay, I'm not sure, but he's a person who's, like, helped Donald Glover with a bunch of his music videos, and they were, like, working on a shot for something, and they were like, and then I think Donald Glover said, it's like, is this how something would look on TV? And Hiro Murai has never directed anything on TV before. He's like, I don't know. And I think that's super interesting. They've managed to include all these, like, really neat details and just awesome shots in how they filmed everything that's made the show even more compelling, I think.
Yeah, I would agree that the Rembert Brown piece was a great thing. If you haven't watched it yet, I don't know why you've listened to this podcast now, but even if you have watched it, which hopefully you have if you're listening, definitely read the Rembert Brown piece.
It's
awesome.
It's really
good.
It's really excellent. It gets you really get a sense of kind of what Donald Glover is trying to do with the show, which is super fascinating. Yeah. Any other, do you guys have any, like, little details from the show that you've liked so far?
I really liked the scene when Alfred versus Paperboy and Darius are in... Darius, right?
Yeah.
Darius are in the... Just, like, the restaurant.
Yeah.
And...
Oh, yeah.
I really liked, like, the shots, and you could see just by these weird, like, slightly low angles, and just kind of not much going on in the background. The lighting is kind of cool. Like, this dark kind of grayed out effect, and you could see, like, it was kind of palpable, like, this kind of anxiety he was feeling while trying to, like, do all these other things. And we've talked about that, but even, like, the little gag joke of when he opens up, like, the special
and it kind of lights up,
yeah, lemon pepper wings,
and there's, like, a light, like, it's the briefcase from Pulp Fiction,
yeah,
like,
yeah. And, like, that stuff like that, and these little, like, I think it was, like, the fast... I think I noticed the cut sped up a little bit, like, when he cuts the guy at the kitchen and stuff mm-hmm. like that. And through the course of that episode, I think there's always these little, like, as if someone's kind of quickly looking over their shoulder mm-hmm. kind yeah. of things. And that's why I think it really... They try to play to the emotion. And I think... Mm-hmm. I didn't know... Actually know that. I have not read that piece you mentioned. But I've noticed, like, the visual storytelling. Because I think a short time, like a music video, and a short time like this show, you could really... play up as much as you can in trying to interpret the story by what you see as opposed to what you hear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just like Donald Glover's haircut. It's a cool haircut.
It is a really cool haircut. Yeah.
That's why.
My favorite little detail from the show that I've seen so far that's like super meaningless and doesn't like really add that much to the story, but I just thought was like really cool and interesting, was in the first episode, towards the beginning, when the guy who works with Ernest shows him the video of Paperboy, his phone screen is super cracked, and I don't know why. I thought that was really interesting, and I don't know if they were trying to say anything there, but it's just like, look, his phone's cracked, my phone's cracked.
Yeah.
Like, well, it was.
Yeah, no, I just think it was, I don't know, I feel like I was left with more of an impression of, like, all the characters and stuff, but, like, as we're talking about it, I remember these small moments, like, when you're talking about the phone cracked, mm-hmm. it made me think of, like, he was like, I'm never gonna sell any of these because I'm not an old lady, and then that old lady who's, like, kind of crazy. It's great.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah. I think that's probably, right.
Yeah. And then the old lady kind of, like, yeah. hunts the white dude.
Yeah.
Like, signed up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I thought, I was watching it at my table in my apartment, and I was like laughing out loud. My friends were like, "What are you?" My roommate housemates were like, "What are you watching?" And I was like, "Actually, do you mind if I watch this on the TV?" And then I played it on the TV, and it was less like, because it's like, it's a little weird, right. But like, I mean, I was still laughing. My housemates were still like, "What is happening?"
Yeah.
So I think it definitely has, I don't know, it has like layers in the sense that like if you're just kind of like glancing at it, you kind of get like the bigger like character story. But like if you're like really watching, like I was cracking up. Yeah.
Yeah. We didn't even get to talk about my favorite joke. Or one of my favorite jokes.
What was your favorite joke, Daniel?
I really liked, I don't know why, I really liked when, after Ernest knocks on Paperboy's door, and then Paperboy comes at it with the gun, and he's like, and then Paperboy walks in, and Donald Glover's character starts walking in, and Paperboy goes, "That's Darius," and Darius is just standing there with a knife, and then Ernest like looks over at him, and he like kind of puts down the knife, pulls the thing off his mouth, and he's like, "Want a cookie?" And holds up like a bowl, and like without missing a beat, Ernest just picks up a cookie and keeps walking. I just thought that whole interaction.
Right. Yeah.
There's so many things funny about that.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I really liked in the second episode, in like the holding cell sequence,
mm-hmm.
I love that little story that the guy told about
yeah.
him and his friend getting like the 40s from
like, the BS.
Yeah,
the
and BS. The guy's like, "I told you, I was sorry." He's like, "Shut the fuck up, man!" Like,
I hate you.
We haven't seen each other in 12 years. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah, it's I love the show so far.
Yeah.
I'm very excited for the next 8 episodes. Even though there's only going to be 8 of them.
That's so depressing.
Right, do you guys...
Back.
Sorry?
No, like, it'll be back. It'll keep
yeah.
on.
Oh, yeah.
I'm excited.
Yeah, it's getting great reviews, so...
Yeah. Do you guys have any concluding thoughts about anything you picked up we haven't talked about today?
If you haven't watched Atlanta, watch Atlanta.
Watch some Childish Gambino music videos to get a better sense of...
Yeah, that's...
The yeah. The music video... His music video is actually, like, yeah. sometimes better than his music.
Which, Heartbeat and The Worst Guys, I think, are the two
yeah.
ones that I would really recommend to give a sense of... like kind of how he feels mm. in visual storytelling.
I really like the music video for Sober.
It's a good one too.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
which where they're dancing in the cafeteria.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like super creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah,
awesome.
Any concluding thoughts, John?
I will echo the sentiment to watch the show if you haven't, but again, why are you listening to this podcast? But if you didn't watch the show and are listening, watch the show and keep listening.
Right.
We'll continue to talk about Atlanta as more episodes come out.
Right. And my final thought / plea to FX is to release an Atlanta soundtrack that's music compiled and like within the show and music compiled by Childish Gambino and all the writers. I think that would be awesome.
I want mucking. I'm just like on my Spotify.
There's another,
right now.
There's another joke from the very beginning where he's like, "What mucking? What is that?" He's like, "I explained it in the hook, you dumbass." Like, I was like, "Oh my god!"
That's a really great show.
It's a really excellent show. that I hope we have not spoiled entirely for you. I really hope you watch the show before coming to
see
this.
They'll watch it first.
I'm sure they'll watch it
Cross
first.
Cross your fingers.
All right. Well, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Untitled Leisure Project. If you would like to hear more podcasts from the Georgetown Voice, you can find them on www.georgetownvoice.com. And now you can find them on iTunes or whatever your favorite podcast app is. I use Overcast, and the Voice Podcast Network shows up there too.
That's so exciting.
It's amazing. And if you are really interested in all the other stuff The Voice and Halftime write about, you can follow them on Twitter at G-Town Voice and at Halftime GU. And if you think we're really smart and you like our opinions and you want to hear about those, you can follow all of us on Twitter. Danielle is at
DNHewitt96.
John is at
John_block_.
And Mike is at
MBergin95BERGIN.
And I am at DRVARG01.
I have a running bet to see who's the first person to get a follower off on these podcasts.
I have a really cute baby picture. I made them in first place already.
All right. Okay. Well, our theme music is by Ben Sound. You can find this song and other royalty-free music at www.bensound.com. Thank you guys so much for coming. This was a blast.
It's been great. Loved it.
Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.